Kappa on opening the sutra.
The Dharma, incomparably profound and minutely subtle, is rarely encountered, even in hundreds of thousands of millions of ages. Now we see this, hear this, receive and maintain this. May we completely realize the Tathagata's true meaning.
Good morning.
Morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
We can say that practice is about clarifying stress, dissatisfaction, suffering, and relieving stress, dissatisfaction, suffering. That's the Buddha's teaching. Suffering and relieving suffering, or an end to suffering. Different ways to say it in English. Whether we talk about stress or unsatisfactoriness or suffering, those are different facets and shades of what disturbs our life, of how and what creates difficulties in life. Now, we've in the class have been reading and clarifying the Diamond Sutra, and there's a nice phrase there that I wanted to pick up and talk about today, talking about attachment to self, being, life, or soul. And that the Bodhisattva does not have a perception or attachment to self, being, life, soul. Now that's the way it's translated in English in the Red Pine translation. Other translations use slightly different words, but which words we use is of secondary importance. What's important is to notice this attachment to, or perception and attachment to, self, being, life, soul, which is different ways of talking about what we do, we humans do, that creates difficulties, suffering, stress, dissatisfactions in our life. What we do, whether in terms of so-called our life or so-called others. When we talk about, when the sutra talks about attachment to self, we can see this not in broad conceptual or theoretical sense, but in the immediate sense, when we have an idea about how someone should or shouldn't be, or is or isn't. And how, when we hold on to that, that hinders us from seeing them at this moment when we're with them, or being ourself this moment in the midst of the circumstances and conditions that ongoing change presents our life. If we have an idea, I shouldn't have to, or He shouldn't be doing, or he always, or she. And you go on from there. Right there is the opportunity to notice where that attachment to self, in other words, attachment to a story about that self who we call John, Paul, Jane, or anything else. Now, there's an importance to clarifying self being life soul, because in a way that's different facets. In a way it's all together, this self-centeredness, but there's different facets when we project it to a future or project it to a story about their, what should I say, underlying characteristic or what he is or isn't or other ways we think about and become entangled in our stories about self and other, so that we hinder our functioning, we hinder the functioning of the universe, and we create stress and suffering through our attachment, through our entanglement of emotion thought. So there's a point where it's important to notice the attachment to self when that arises, the attachment to being when that arises, with the attachment to life when that arises, the attachment to soul when that arises. Now again, those aren't different things, but they're different ways of seeing. There's nothing wrong with those words, but if we reify them and try to make them into solid, fixed, permanent things in the midst of this ongoing change that is our life, then perceiving life in that way creates difficulties, creates stress, creates suffering, can create harm. So that's the reason that the Diamond Sutra brings up that point and brings it up over and over, because of how significant it is in either perpetuating stress and suffering or in clarifying and relieving stress and suffering. Excuse me. So, as I like to do, I just spoken for a few minutes. I don't want to go on too much, because it's not important to have theory or concepts, but valuable, maybe something I said can lead us to talking about our practice, because that's what's valuable to do here together, to talk about how something I have said or something else that you want to bring up, we can clarify together in terms of our life practice, our where stress, suffering arise, and how, where, what would be skillful and appropriate practice to relieve, release that. So I'll stop now and see what you might have to say, and we can explore together.
So, if through practice...
You have to speak up a little louder so everyone can hear.
If through practice, self falls away, will stress fall away altogether, or will it just be being able to see it, be with it, and know what's skillful to do?
In a way, what you said is good. It's what's important is to be able to be experiencing and see what's skillful and appropriate responding. But the first point, there's no self to fall away except when there's attachment to self. Otherwise, there's nothing to fall away, nothing that needs to get rid of, nothing that self is fine. My name is Eliu or Genmio. Your name is Deborah. Or she, he. Fine words. Nothing wrong with using the idea of self. As long as we're not attached, caught up, entangled with it, or as long as it doesn't become the way we perceive things in a way that blinds us. I have to know who's in front of me in order to give you the right paycheck if I'm handing out paychecks. But if I get blinded by how come she got so much, or how come she got so little, or how come he, then the idea of self, or they don't deserve to get paid, they didn't do what I did, or then that creates suffering, the attachment, the perception of judging that others, how others are or aren't, and what we hold on to with that, especially if it's about last week and last month and last year. That doesn't mean we're stupid and forget those things, but at the same time, if we hold on to that, then that can blind us. So, there's falling away is when there's something there. When there's nothing here, there's nothing to fall away.
Can I ask it differently?
Sure.
If the attachment, if you realize and the attachment falls away.
Good.
Same question. If the attachment falls away and you just walk through and there's an acceptance of whatever is, will stress go away?
Yes. There won't be stress about that because you can be present and experience the encounter and then respond. That doesn't mean stress and suffering doesn't arise, but when they arise we can see how and where to relieve it, and in a sense the ongoing, what should I say, cause and effect stress will keep releasing, if I use that kind of word. But you can test it and see it for yourself. One here, and then Hosan.
When you started in your Dharma talk, and you were talking about self, and then others, then I was seeing self beyond myself to, well, we'll say my sister-in-law.
Yeah.
She is self. Also, and
of course,
so it's my not making up stories or judging or but releasing my stories about that self, which then I can see her.
Right, and or noticing the stories you're holding on to about her and what you're building from it. It doesn't mean you have to know, oh, she's my sister-in-law. She's not my sister-in-law. That's fine. but it's the attachment to, it's the perception that assumes certain things about him and not him, or her and her. And in a way, you could say it the other way. You could say all the things that we are sure we know, the judgments and beliefs about others, if they get in the way of us seeing and being with the other right now. If, you know, you get a message, let's say a text or an email from them, and before you even open it, you go, oh! And you could notice it bodily, you could notice it in thoughts, you could notice it in your clenched jaw about, oh, I've got to deal with her now. And that's good. The noticing it is the opportunity to experience being here, and in a sense releasing that, if you want to say it that way, releasing not anything to release, but releasing the clenching, or being the clenching, experiencing it, and then not holding to it because it's arising, passing, and then you respond. In the midst of the clenching reaction, you be not knowing, you be experiencing moment, and then you could see what's appropriate and skillful. And it might be to take a step back because she's screaming at you. Oh, might not. Or she might be fine and wanting to embrace you. Then you take a step forward. Or whatever. Hosan, yes.
Yes, I'm involved with several different paths, and one of the paths that I'm involved with, Open Heart, we see that practice is not just sitting. Life itself is practice. And one of the ways that we view that is that whenever we find ourselves being stressed out, irritated, that is an opportunity to gently just smile and relax your shoulders and relax the energy around your heart and use that opportunity to relax and smile. What happens when we find ourselves being irritated or put in situations where we feel dis-ease or uncomfortable, then hypnotically and unknowns to us that our body starts to constrict and contract and shoulders go up and clench teeth like you mentioned before. But whenever we notice ourselves feeling uneasy, that's an opportunity to just gently drop your body weight, smile, relax your shoulders, relax your heart, and just stay there as long as you can, allow the energy to pass through. Because what happens is when it starts to pass through, when we clench up and constrict and contract, we hold on to that, and then we just bury it, and it doesn't allow it to pass through. And we are told to be like an acupuncture needle that allows the energy to flow through us and out of us and just be with it, but use those as opportunities to relax and smile.
And notice the, as you use the word clench, use the word open heart. See, open heart is, if we could say it, the other side of when there's the clenched heart story about the present moment, or clenched heart reaction to what we think we know about him or her or this circumstance or myself. You know, my so-called body condition that shouldn't be this way. I shouldn't feel achy or sick or however it is. And that itself is the opportunity, because that itself is the present moment. Or, conversely, that's the moment where we're attached to self being life soul. And again, that's, I repeat those words because that's the words in the sutra, and those are in some ways a way to talk about different facets of how we humans think about, conceptualize, or get entangled with this life that we are, or this ongoing change that we are, that's birth, death, and yet not born, not destroyed.
Let me say something. I wanted to tell. Oops, I'm sorry, I'm
I wanted to tell him so that I was sitting here. I'm Joe, and I opened my eyes once and looked over at him, and he had his heart open because he has the most beautiful smile. It relaxed me. I want you to know that.
Yeah. Good.
And I wrote down something just yesterday that I thought was pretty profound, and I just wanted to share it. It said, I heard it spoken. He said, we are not human beings having a spiritual experience. We are spiritual beings having a human experience.
I wouldn't even say we're spiritual beings. Even that creates a daydream. See? We're just this moment ongoing change. See, even if we hold on to beings, then we have an idea, self and not self, or other. So how do we not hold on to those? That's fine words, nothing wrong with them. And
spiritual.
What?
Beings.
Well, it doesn't... Both of those words can be fine words, and they could be useful supports. No problem with them, except if we hold on to them, they can entangle us and hinder this that we are. See, that's in one reason why the Diamond Sutra, or the Heart Sutra, but the Diamond Sutra, because that's what we've been looking at in class, is can be difficult for some, because we want the story about beings or life or soul, which are all fine words, but if we get caught with those in those ideas, then they hinder us. Otherwise, any word you want to use, fine. Let's give other people a chance. I don't want to just see, it's important. It's important to see that there's nothing that needs to be said, because the only point of talking about practice is to support us to be who we are. There's not any... The Buddha, after he awakened, for a while, didn't just stayed there and didn't really go out. And he wondered whether there was any point in going out and sharing, whether it was even possible to share with others. And only after he clarified that there was a value did he start wandering for 50 years throughout India, just to clarify practice for those who wanted, those who came to him with questions of what was your awakening, what is your teaching. He didn't have anything to give them, except to say, this is the nature of reality, what, you know, impermanence, if we say it that way, what arises passes, and to clarify that suffering comes because of attachment, clinging, and that there's a way to relieve suffering. There was someone else there, but don't.
Go ahead.
It's okay.
Things can hinder practice, as you might know. And I used to be hindered, not so much anymore, a lot of in terms of practice in my life, by certain concepts that I was holding on to, especially in reference to practice. One would be, and is, you know, supposed to be wise, or or peaceful, and an even more difficult one for me was, I'm supposed to be happy all the time, Practice is supposed to make me feel good and be happy all the time. And far from it, especially certain times, certain aspects of practice, it tends to go the other way. You get in touch with things that, aspects of yourself that aren't so pleasant all the time. But an example, a real life example, was for me Friday. We were fostering two kittens. We foster cats at my house, in case you didn't know. And we had two kittens, and I wasn't paying attention, and one of the kittens made the fatal error of jumping on my dog when I was asleep. And the dog instantly broke its neck, and the kitten took a couple of minutes to die in a very gruesome, very bloody situation. Yeah. And there's nothing there to be happy about. There's no opening. When you open your heart to that, you open it to pain. And you open it to grief. And it was only a cat. You can say it's only a cat, but it's very sad. And there's guilt there, and there's all those things arose. So practice doesn't negate any of that, or it doesn't say that, you know, an enlightened person doesn't feel these things. Of course they do. Even more so, I believe, from what I know, which isn't much. But it's opening, it's allowing these feelings to be as they are in that moment, even if it doesn't feel good, even if, and I've noticed over a long period of time that that's much more helpful to be open to the sadness and the and the pain, the suffering.
No. Don't mix the two. It's
important. Well, we talked about this last Sunday about the difference between suffering and pain. And I was the one that brought up that there's a difference between suffering and pain, and here I am talking of the two as if they're the same.
We do mix them up in our life. And then, in a sense, we extend what's not pain into pain when we create suffering and call it pain. And then we also refuse sometimes to allow the pain or grieving which arises in this process of being embodied, if I say it that way. And in doing that, we sometimes entangle the suffering into that and catastrophize what's grieving or painful, what's growing old or being sick or being with a cat that's dying or whatever.
Not being willing to be that experience, be that arising suffering. It just makes it so much worse, and it makes it a thing that re-arises in your life in unexpected ways.
And seeing what's appropriate and skillful. Oh, I have to be careful with kittens that come into this house when the dog's around. And you learn, kittens need to be kept in a separate room from the dog, or vice versa, until they get used to the dog. Otherwise, it's not skillful, because it's like turning off the traffic lights and not letting anyone know. And then sooner or later, there's going to be some crashes. Because that's what people do on this road. They're used to traffic lights. Or taking them out of sync so that they're both green at the same time. You know what's going to happen. But we sometimes expect, there shouldn't be any problems with that. Etc. Well, we learn. We make mistakes. And then we grieve over something, if it's our mistake, or we grieve over the nature of life, death, of getting sick, dying. And that could be in a level of humans, it could be in the changes that occur in circumstances of all sorts. Circumstances change. We like to enjoy the ones that we want, and the ones that we don't want shouldn't happen. As if what I want and what I don't want is the determining.
Or they shouldn't affect us.
Well, that's another daydream. But
as everybody is speaking, you know, I'm realizing that I'm cold at this present moment. I'm realizing my body is shaking a little bit. I realize I'm in a lot of emotion. I'm in a state of flux. But you know, as some of you know, I just recently had some surgery and had to have a mastectomy. And as I, it was good results. I mean, there was no involved with my lymph nodes or anything like that. But you know, they say that I could get it again. But get cancer again. But here's what I came to realize when you're talking about an old self. I thought, you know, they removed a breast. That wasn't me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm still here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my mind's raced here and there and everywhere. You know, is that really me? Truthfully, I don't know what me is.
Good.
And we talk about spiritual versus. Sometimes I think, am I just energy? You know, I don't know. I guess it's a mystery.
I don't know is good. See, not knowing is a very intimate life that we are. Not knowing. And being not knowing as a practice, or to say it the other way, noticing what we know and are attached to and are sure of, is important. Not that there's anything wrong with knowing, but, and not that you have to say, oh, I'm not knowing. It's just when that occurs, that's great. Then we can be present. See, when we know things, it sometimes gets in the way of experiencing, of being present, of being, if we use the word awareness, or being breathing, being sitting, being standing, are hindered by what we know about sometimes. If you're cold, you put on a coat. There'll be some warm tea later. That's what we do. We turned up the temperature here, but I don't know what it is. Sometimes we discover, oh, that's a little cool. It might be 68 at the thermostat, but down here where we're sitting, it's a little colder. So we adjust it. Or we put on a coat. Or we shiver a little.
Well, I had, what do you want to call it, an aha moment a moment ago. Because when you're talking about tension, I was thinking, okay, what makes me tense? And so I was thinking, all right, well, it's usually an either or. And should I do this or should I do that? And then I was thinking, you know, because I had an idea of what those two things were, but I was thinking, well, after this. And then I thought, no, wait a minute, why am I thinking that now? Because it's not happening now.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't need to worry about that now. And it will come, I will know what to do at the time when I get to that split in the road, whether to go this way or that way.
Or you might stand there also and not know, and then see what to do. Okay, I don't know which to do. Is there something to do right now?
Yeah, but that's the moment to think about that.
That's
not
right.
Not right now.
Or to notice that you are thinking about that right now, and then see what's practice in the midst of trying to figure that out,
and
what I'm going to do tomorrow.
Letting go.
Good. So,
yeah,
just releasing the holding on to it and letting it come and go. It comes and goes. All sorts of thoughts and feelings, if we use that kind of term, come and go. They come and go. That's the nature of this moment life. And ours is to be this, be practice, if I say it that way, or be the experiencing, or be the skillful responding in the midst of being present. Yes?
For what it's worth. Practice. Underlying practice, attention, or awareness.
Uh-huh.
Be aware of what this present moment is. Notice if there's attachment.
Uh-huh.
That's what freezes pretty much, is being present.
And we don't even have to be aware of what, just be the awareness. And the what naturally is revealed in our functioning, in to the extent of our capacities of the at this moment. Sometimes the questions that we ask can get in the way, and sometimes they could be skillful and appropriate supports, and it's up to us to see which is which, or up to us to test which is which.
Of
course, that's reactive habits.
Mm-hmm. And it's
this moment to take care of it. See, just take care of what appears right now. There's nothing else to get rid of. There's no attachment except the attachment of this moment to deal with. In a sense, the ongoing practice of being present, of sitting and all the other things you do, is what creates the container, or call it the cause and effect, support and circumstances that makes it possible to take care of this moment. But all we have to do is take care of the attachment, the entanglement that we notice right now, the belief, the emotion, thought that we're holding to right now, or what that we see that we're doing right now. That's all.
But you have to notice it, and of course I know this for me. It takes practice, and it takes to be able to notice in the midst of it.
Right.
And the only way is to practice.
That's right.
You bring that to that moment, or otherwise the moment takes over, and there's no noticing.
That's right. Until there is. And our life and attachments and suffering itself are supports, in the sense that they poke us and they remind us. And if we don't notice right the first poke, then sometimes the second poke or the third poke, or I'm getting angrier and angrier. Oh, what's happening right there? So you're right. You might not notice, but then there's this moment to notice. Don't worry about what you missed. That's just a story, ancient. And the supports that we utilize, if I say it in that way, in our life, are what enable us to notice when we can, what we're holding on to, what we're believing, where we're reacting out of habits that aren't skillful. So it doesn't matter that I didn't notice before, because now is the opportunity. And I don't have to worry about, will I notice next time?
I'll worry about that.
Well, good. Then that worrying about... that worrying about is a wonderful reminder to notice the habit of worrying and trying to figure it out and plan. And right there is the opportunity to be right here. It's okay. It's just another habit that hinders our functioning in this ongoing change that is who we are. See, it's another habit that creates the perception of self being life. You know, I've got to worry about my life. I've got to worry about what he's going to be doing next week. See, those perceptions and stories and attachments create stress. And we know it in our body, because we could feel the stress or the suffering or the, you know, dissatisfaction. Oh, he's always that way. Oh, why? Always. Oh, right there. You see it. If you could notice what's happening.
These attachments, we're heavily invested in these things. They're precious to us.
What? So?
Yeah,
okay.
Lifetime.
If you want, we could say many lifetimes, many pasts, but it doesn't make a difference. It's now that the opportunity is. Sure. Always, you know, beginningless energies that come together as us. Think of all your ancestors, just on a simple biological level and ecological level and environmental level. Think of all the beings that made possible your existence right now, hearing that. Your parents, grandparents, the food you ate, the food they ate, the various people that they were connected to, the people, and not just people, all the beings, the sun, the moon, all of those are what came together to make our life right this moment. See? But we don't have to work all that out. It's useful to occasionally bring it up, and then we appreciate it in taking care of what right this moment is in our cup and tasting this. Being thankful, if we say it that way, for this. Or being open to this right now. Okay. Thank you all.